Welcome to CT Strategies Unpacked, a podcast that explores insider perspectives of global trade and customs and border management. In this leadership series, we will talk to current and former trade professionals to get a layer deeper than regulation and enforcement. In today's segment, our host, Eric Moncayo, sits down with supply chain and CTPAT expert Ron May to talk about working in CBP and the transformation of the CTPAT program from his time as director to now. Recorded live on August 31st, 2021, this is the first podcast in the CTS Meet the Team series.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening for those of us watching out there in the cyberspace. This is Eric Moncayo with CT Strategies. We're starting a leadership series here at CT Strategies where we're introducing the members of our team. One thing that CT Strategies prides itself on is the diversity of the team. And that's one thing that I want to be able to highlight with our first guest, the distinguished Ron May. So Ron spent some time with Customs and Border Protection and its legacy agency, U.S. Customs Service. So Ron, thank you for joining us today. I have a couple of questions that I'd like to delve into with you. But first and foremost, tell us about your career with CBP and Legacy Customs.
Well, I'm absolutely privileged to be number one. So thank you for doing that. Makes my day. But I was with CBP, Legacy U.S. Customs, for 31 years. During that time, I was uniformed for the first half, a little over the first half of my career. Did the land borders, seaports, airports. I was on various enforcement units, contraband enforcement team, anti-terrorism team. So I was blessed to have the diversity of going all over the country, all the disciplines and customs, which I think helps set the foundation for your future, especially when you get into leadership. Then I transitioned post 9/11 kind of into the executive leadership role. The CTPAT program was started, Customs Trade Partnership Against Terrorism. I was fortunate enough to get hired as the original supply chain security specialist for the Washington, D.C. field office. Very fortunate again to get elevated to management. I was the director of the D.C. field office for the program. A couple times I was appointed as the acting director of the entire program. But then I was selected to open the first CTPAT field office on a land border that was in Buffalo, New York. And probably around 12 or 13 years of my career was spent kind of starting the CTPAT program, helping lay the foundation. I wrote some of the criteria for some of the enrollment sectors. One of the most interesting things was doing mutual recognition work around the world with other foreign customs administrations, Jordan, Canada, Israel, the European Union, to name a few. And then I finished my career with the last 3 years being a CBP attaché for Canada. I was stationed at the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa. You know something about this because you come from that international affairs background as well. So I thought I had a great career, a long one, although I know others that go even longer. But blessed with it and very, very fortunate to have been where I was and I think contributing to some of the overall, hopefully, security of the country.
So, yes, absolutely. So we do share that in common, that we were both attachés. Now, I'll tell you, just from my personal experience, that a lot of times when I'd be coming back into the country and people would ask me, who do you work for and what do you do? I'd say, well, I work for CBP and I'm an attaché. Most people didn't know what that was.
Right.
And when when they would see that on my business card or see that on my credentials, they'd say, what's an attaché? And so for those that aren't familiar with the term, just kind of explain to us the role of the attaché. And more importantly, talk to us about how that differed from the traditional CBP work that you were doing before you went overseas and how that affected you once you had that experience.
Really good questions. And I used to drive back from Ottawa into northern New York or western New York, as they call it. And you're right. Many times the CBP officer wanted you identified yourself, didn't know what your position was or what entailed. So basically what I used to say is it's my responsibility as a CBP attaché to Canada to liaise with the Commissioner of U.S. Customs, CBP, and the ambassador to the United States to Canada. Communicate between them, make sure the ambassador of the United States to Canada is understanding of what CBP's mission is, what our abilities are, what the things we do. Of course, anytime there's an issue, for example, we had a real issue while I was there with northbound migration into Canada, people crossing legally. So there was issues of what kind of authorities we have, not only, you know, Border Patrol, other things. And then making sure whatever CBP's position is relayed appropriately to that ambassador from the commissioner. One unique point too, and I'm not sure if you realize this as well, but I served as the CBP attaché under two different ambassadors' administrations. So one was during the Obama administration, one was during the Trump administration. The thing that really is important for an attaché is to communicate. CBP's mission does not change. Our mission stays intact. We continue to be, you know, guardians of the borders, make sure illegal things don't come in or go out. And that doesn't matter who's in power politically or whatever, who the ambassador is working for. And so that was an important point that to get across, that our mission stays, you know, consistent. I think some of the things that I learned are when you're a CBP officer, and I'll try to put this politely, in the beginning of the career, you go, you find it, your enforcement. You're looking for things. You really don't care about other explanations or issues. You're just there to find it, stop it, make arrests, do whatever you're supposed to do. Then as you kind of evolve, I guess I'll say, into this situation where you're learning to be kind of an ambassador or have a different tact, and I'll use the word partnership, you realize that you need others' assistance to get things done. And that's what CTPAT, for example, has done, is striking a partnership with the trade where in the old days, customs would say, well, we're going to open this and take it all out. And, you know, you don't really have any say in it. Now you engage the trade as partners to say, okay, what information do you have to help me to decide if I should look at this or what I need to do? So I think that's what it taught me, is to allow that partnership, allow other areas of information to come in to give you the ability to be better at your job. Because, you know, we always used to say one of the worst things at CBP is you look out at the border and you look at an aircraft with all these people coming in. You don't have time to talk to every person, look at every car. You have to be selective. How do you do that? And I think that's one of the things that we learn as we go along. And I'm sure you can agree with your leadership credentials that you learn how to be selective and what things you can take into account to be better and more efficient, facilitative in your job. I talk too much, Eric. I know you're going to have to stop me sometimes.
On the contrary, I have a couple of follow-up questions for you.
Sure. Just
specifically in the transition, because there's one thing I think it's important for folks to understand, is that you started off with what we call legacy U.S. Customs Service.
Correct.
And after 9/11, they created this behemoth called the Department of Homeland Security, and they merged a lot of different agencies, which, you know, there's a lot of debate and analysis as to what the best marriage was, which ones made the best fit. But I think, having worked at a port of entry, I think it's safe to say that most of the folks that work under the roof should have been under the same agency. And I'll let you opine on that. But more importantly, talk to us about how difficult it was when you're the liaison to the State Department or you're the liaison to the government of Canada, and you're having to represent so many different equities with so many different partners, and you're the jack of all trades, for lack of a better term, all things customs and trade and border. So I'll let you run with that.
So your first part of your question, yes. Let me answer the second part just to kind of lay the foundation for the first. But you're right. At the embassy, anytime anything happened that wasn't in the United States, it was CBP. So if there was an attack overseas somewhere, the immediate answer was, well, go talk to CBP, go talk to Customs and Border Protection. And a lot of time is spent educating on what the depth of our operation is and how far it can reach and how far it cannot reach in some of the authorities we have. So, and, you know, having Border Patrol, I'm sure you've heard this before. I can't tell you how many times someone would say, oh, you work for U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. It's U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And so that confusion of what we do sometimes caused some difficulties. However, it also had me involved in everything with the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, all the State Department, as you mentioned, a real diversity, and had you as kind of one of the points of the spear, tips of the spear, if they say, with negotiations or discussions with the country. I went to Canadian Parliament a number of times to talk to individuals about some of the complexities of land border crossings and legal issues, you know, who you can look at, who you can't look at, what kind of technology can apply. So I told you that to answer the first part. The reason we developed DHS was that information exchange. There was too much segmentation amongst the agencies to be able to transfer information instantaneously. I think that was a great idea to put an umbrella that says, okay, instead of me, you know, there's some things, as you know, we literally can't take information out of one system and give it to somebody. There's rules if they're not within our department. So once you put more in our department, then you can say, yes, here's the information. It allows us to legally do things more efficiently. I will say there's some difficulties, though. There's a reason there's an agriculture inspector, an immigration inspector, a border patrol officer, a customs officer, because those disciplines are very unique and very complex in many ways. So to suddenly say, you're going to be all of it, you're going to be an immigration officer, you're going to be an agriculture officer, you're going to be a customs officer. I understand the impetus behind it after the 9/11, but I think it's difficult to take away the focus of the one discipline and have a team concept where we work together in our different agencies or different disciplines versus saying, okay, today you're going to be a customs, you're going to be here, tomorrow you're going to be involved more with immigration classification. So I have a mixed view on that. I'm, you know, old timer, you're like, immigration was this, customs was this, we work together. And I think I obviously grind more to that. But I think that over time, we've come back to an understanding that you do need to have those disciplines within the agency. And we've kind of allowed some to specialize in agriculture. I mean, understanding the differences in certain kinds of pests that are threats to the United States, that's very complex. And you have to have a background in that versus, you know, why are we looking at certain manifests or cargo descriptions for inspection? So it all kind of, it's a learning curve. 9/11 was a very unfortunate beginning to that, but it did cause us to understand some things and do some things better. And I think we continue to improve and understand that we have to have expertise, but allow for that intercommunication. I don't know if you have any same viewpoints as I do on that.
You know what? I think, and if you ever do, like, you know, if you follow history or follow leadership, it's cataclysmic events that drive, you know, major organizational change and major cultural change. And I think that's the only way anyone would have, in their right mind, tried to take something on like that, where you have, you know, pieces of Department of Justice, the Department of the Interior, Department of Commerce, Department of Treasury, and turn them into a new thing. And you're right, you know, you have folks that spent their entire careers, you know, becoming masters of their discipline, you know, becoming, you know, subject matter experts in their field. And from one day to the next, they realize that, well, that's only 20% of your job now. You know, you spent the last 20, 30 years becoming the resident expert on these issues. Yeah. But from now on, I need you to cover, you know, all the bases. And I know from my experience coming up through the agency, that's when it really hit me. The diversity and the depth of the CBP portfolio was when I went overseas, and you had to be the one-stop shop for all things. And that was one of the reasons that I kind of took a different approach to it. I was like, well, there's no way that I'm going to be able to master all these different disciplines. I just need to master the switchboard, you know, which numbers or which buttons do I have to push to get the answer,
right,
that they're asking for. And then as we've learned over in our time overseas is I'll find out and I'll get back with you. It's right. Usually, you know, the one thing that you can say to buy yourself, you know, 12 hours or 24 hours to figure out who actually is a SME.
That's the golden answer. That's the golden answer.
Just buy yourself enough time to make sure that you can get back to the boss and let them know what it is they're looking for. But most definitely, I think, you know, I started my career on the Southwest border. And so it was back then we had Customs Patrol Officers, CPOs. They would be driving, you know, east on the border. We'd be driving west on the border, and we just kind of salute each other as we're driving past. but there was no information sharing. We didn't know what they were up to. They didn't know what we were up to. And then at the port of entry, you get folks that they were either documented aliens or U.S. citizens that would come and go on through the ports of entry, but then they'd be doing nefarious stuff in between the ports of entry. And it wasn't until we started merging some of these databases that we realized that we were dealing with a very complex issue when it comes to national and border security, which I think was, it was one of the outcomes of 9/11 that was unfortunate, but at the same time, I think it just really, really, demonstrated the need to, if nothing else, have some robust information sharing across the folks that work so closely together, whether it be a community or a building.
And you bring up a great point. So one of the things folks don't realize is prior to 9/11, not only did you have those different agencies, but they were underneath different departments, Treasury, Justice, which made it even more difficult. Plus, some of the authorities, there was a period of time when Border Patrol didn't have the authority to seize narcotics. So this evolution that was necessary to allow, these different departments and agencies to act a little bit more in tune with each other and kind of do all the basis of the job. It was an important evolution, not only just interagency, but outside, given authorities and granting abilities to be able to do things. So I agree. It's been interesting to watch and see the evolution. I feel, again, it's horrible that it took 9/11, and you're very correct when you say cataclysmic events seem to generate change. But to see, we were talking offline, when I first started in customs in 87, we didn't have computers. I mean, I can remember when we used to get alerts and stuff, it was the old teletype that you see on TV, like on the old Hawaii 5-0, not the new one, the old one. No pictures, no information, just this teletype. And to now have the ability to have a phone that I can get a picture and instantaneous search, it's incredible. And just a little over 30-some plus years, how quickly we've evolved technology-wise, ability to, skill set, it's really incredible.
Yeah, absolutely, and not to yearn for the days gone by, but we used our database was Polaroid pictures and index cards.
That's right.
And so it was one of those things that you would go and say, "Hey, you look familiar. Let me go to the big old bulletin board and scroll across the bulletin board, see if you're one of the bad guys that we're supposed to be looking for." But now that you're retired from Customs and Border Protection, and you've had, like we talked about at the top of the hour, an illustrious career with CBP. You did 30 plus years. Most folks would retire to the rocking chair, but you're not doing that. So you signed up with CT Strategies, and you're one of our affiliates here. So tell us about what you're working on with CT Strategies.
Sure. So, I think one of those things is, I'll be very frank, it is nice to be able to retire, but going home and sitting around and doing nothing or playing golf once a month, it just ain't going to happen. I think people like yourself, as well as me, are passionate about what we have done and still interested in what happens. I'm very interested in keeping up with CBP and global events related to fight on terrorism. I still would like to be a part of that. I think it's important. I think one of the things that we need to do a better job of today is allow those who have been there, done that, to mentor the new folks coming on. I don't think we do enough of that anymore. I think we depend too much on technology. Now I'm the old guy in the rocking chair complaining, but I think there's great value in embracing someone who's been there, been around, and asking, "Hey, how did you do this? What did you see?" So I think that I bring an ability, as well as you do, to be able to educate those who are just starting out. So some of the things we've done is with CT Strategies, they're allowing me to continue that effort with that kind of globalization of what's called the authorized economic operator, that ability to establish security standards globally amongst different nations, customs administrations, and also bring the trade element into it to allow them to understand why these processes and procedures are put in place and how they can benefit from it as well. So it's that relationship where CBP is being helped by the trade adhering to stronger security standards, but the trade is being helped because with stronger trade or security standards, their facilitation is better. Therefore, product moves more quickly, more efficiently, and with less interruption. So I'm very much interested in that. I love the fact of being able to engage globally all over the world. The pandemic has been an unfortunate event for everyone. But it's robbed me of one of the things I like the most. I would really like to be there with you as opposed to doing the virtual. One of the things I'm doing right now is we're continuing to do validations. We're assisting a foreign customs agency on participating in virtual validations. We've done, I think, 15 of them in the Middle East. And it works. The virtual system works. You learn to adapt to technology, but you still have to make sure you do your homework. You make sure that the security processes and procedures you're looking for that you normally would physically verify in person, how do you verify that now in a virtual environment? And one of the things we're finding is, of course, technology allows you to access documentation and pictures and video, and that for the time. Let's hope that there's a time we'll go back to at least some of the way it was. But that technology allows you to still keep maneuvering, still keep operating. One of the biggest fears of any trade component is interruption. So when 9/11 happened, everything shut down. I don't know if people will remember, but the border, for example, we closed it. We literally closed the border for a couple days because, to be honest, I don't think we knew what to do. Then when we opened up, I remember in Detroit, we searched every car. Every car that came in, traffic was backed up for miles. You can't do that. You can't maintain that kind of level of intensity for any period of time. So over time, we were able to find methods and methodologies to allow us to facilitate that. Not only get back to the way it was, but find ways to even grant more facilitative ways. And I think that's one of the things I'm excited about helping is finding ways to make things operate even smoother in a post 9/11 environment to allow cargo sometimes to move through uninspected. I use that term without, there should be explanation. Everything's inspected, whether it's paperwork or something else, but to physically look at it, you may not need to do that. So assisting companies now, continuing to bring the passion that I've had, explaining to them, you know, why it's important to help verify and secure their supply chain. I still like to keep in touch with the agency. Don't want to let go. It is nice not to have to work, you know, get the phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning from the ambassador. But at the same time, it's still great to be involved. And I'm sure as you, I don't want to let go. I think anybody who's been in a career long enough, you know, doesn't let go completely and always maintains an interest in what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's something that's important that we stress is folks that get into this line of work, you know, being a public servant, you end up doing part of what you do because you believe in what you're doing. And with that comes some commitment and some passion. And obviously you've brought that passion and that energy with you into retirement. So you mentioned a couple of things that I wanted to come back to. So you started your career with CTPAT, and so CTPAT was born out of a lot of necessities, and it was an operational model that was designed to do a certain thing a certain way. But over the past 20, 30 years now, and especially in the last couple of years, now that COVID has really forced us to rethink how we do things, kind of give us like a comparison and a contrast to the traditional CTPAT validation process to what we're doing now.
Yeah, that's a really unique and interesting situation. So the program started post 9/11, and it had not changed in its core concept until right before the pandemic. That was the first time that the program decided to change what's called its minimum security criteria and update them, all of them. That was the first time it happened in basically 20 years. Unfortunately, that change coincided with the beginning of the pandemic. So now, not only are you changing some of the core values of the program, which things like money laundering, forced labor, agriculture, and just overall executive commitment to the program, now you're also challenged with the normal validation process having to change and even be suspended for an initial period of time. So that's where the virtual validation comes in. And CBP and CTPAT are now challenged with how do you maintain the program that's been in operation and successful with, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of validations completed all over the world. How do you continue that in a virtual environment and maintain the integrity and verification elements that you had with the physical verification? So that's the challenge that's being done now. That's where the next level is. I think personally, even, and I know we talk about when it goes back to normal, I'm reminded of someone asking a question of a leader in CBP Customs after 9/11, saying, "When's it going to go back to the way it was?" It's not. We're now in a new. This is a new way of doing things. I think post pandemic, it's not going to go back to the way it was. We're just going to have to adapt and move on. And I think the virtual validation concept, even in a post pandemic environment, will continue because, frankly, it's efficient. It's less cost inhibiting. It does have some limitations, which I think we're trying to overcome. But I also think it allows for much more. It costs a lot of money to send validators, you know, to physical locations around the world. It's also sometimes dangerous. So the virtual concept is something that's going to, I think, always supplement and be a new part of the CTPAT program. But remember the concept of CTPAT. It's trust but verify. So when participants are in the program, they provide information. What CTPAT and their personnel are doing is verifying that information. It's a very simple concept. If you say you have a 9-foot-high fence, show it to me. If you say you have 27 CCTV cameras located throughout the facility, show me the plan. Show me the SOP, how they operate. Very simple. In my time in CTPAT doing validations, and I've done hundreds and hundreds all over the world, the only times we ever had any problem was when someone was ill-prepared, kind of not ready for us to be there, or lied. And that's pretty rare. I mean, it's kind of like saying I got a front door to my house, but you don't. I mean, it's obvious when you get there that it's not there. I think one of the funniest things I ever saw was I'm not going to name the country, but a company said they had a gated entrance into their facility. So we drive up to the facility. I'm not joking. There was a guard holding a piece of string across the driveway. And when we got there, he waved to us and he lowered the string and we drove in. That was the gated entrance. So if you wouldn't have seen it for yourself, but I've seen things like that all over the world. And I think that's part of the process, the verification element. So it's exciting that you're embracing new technology. This is necessary. I think the updating of the criteria was necessary to keep the program relevant. But we just talked about one of the main reasons it's important to do that, technology. How much has changed since you and I have been around, right? And for a program to be indoctrinated post 9/11 to now, things have changed dramatically. And to not keep up with those changes would be a failure of the program. So I think embracing virtual technology, embracing other technology, cybersecurity, things that are now even more important than they used to be, I think that shows validity to the program. I think that's why it's exciting to continue to be involved with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the things that that for folks that are not in the trade space, MRA, you know, mutual recognition, it is like the crown jewel.
Yeah.
And there's a path to get to that mutual recognition. And it just goes back to exactly what you just described, where you have to, you know, employ, you know, consistent, reliable security standards. And those standards need to be, you know, inspected and verified from time to time to make sure that it's still applicable and everything's still relevant in order to be able to move that cargo. Because one of the things that I do think is that we need to stress is when we talk about, you know, cross-border trade, that's codependent. And one thing that we've learned in the last year and a half, 2 years with the travel restrictions from country to country and all these other things because of the pandemic is there's a codependency on people across the world to be able to move and speak and travel and to trade all over the world. And so we're not in a position anymore as a society or as a government or as a nation to be unilateral, because we depend on so much coming in and leaving the United States that we have to be able to adjust to deal with some of the challenges that we're seeing. And you know what? There's like three or four other topics that I think that we've kind of scratched the surface on that I'd love to spend another hour with you on. But you're moving at a pretty good clip right now with what you're doing with CT Strategies and the CTPAT program. What's next for Ron? What's the next big hurdle? What's the next big mountain you're going to climb? Because like I said, at this stage in your professional career, you think you'd be sipping lemonade on the porch, but it doesn't sound like that's what you're going to be doing.
Well, and I hope to continue to be, you know, involved and aggressive and interested. But I think one of the things I'm continuing, one of the goals I had early on. So as I got involved in an internationalization, I'll use that word, globalization, and the idea. And as you said, you make a great point. One of the CTPET is supposed to form a partnership with the trade. So businesses help us help what we do. But you also made a great point. It's very difficult to engage another nation and its administration to also support. One of the hardest things to do is have one administration, for example, the CBP, ask another administration somewhere in the world and say, can you look at this for us? And when they do it and their inspection, they say everything's fine. To trust that assessment and use that as part of your overall risk assessment process, that's a lot to ask. Understanding too that different authorities have different or different agencies, different nations have different authorities. So sometimes when you ask certain things, they may not be able to do it. So the challenges of that mutual recognition, that challenges of trying to globalize security standards, everybody thinks, oh, you should mandate everybody has CCTV. That should be in every nation. Well, there may be some nations that it's illegal to have cameras in certain parts because of privacy. Background checks, you know, law enforcement background checks. There are some places where it's not authorized for a company to get a law enforcement background check. I think in the European Union, there are some areas at that. So all those complexities, I crave the ability to engage those and continue to work. I think what I'd like to see in the biggest picture, the World Customs Organization is a real pusher of the authorized economic operator. And I'd like to see that centralized. I'd like to see more of a globalization of these standards so that eventually, and I know the trade would like this, whatever US CBP does and whatever CBSA in Canada does and whatever the aduana in Mexico does and whatever the European Union does and whatever New Zealand does, it all is the same kind of interconnected capability. You know, one of the things the trade would love, and I know this is a pipe dream, is whatever manifest, I think the 7501 that CBP uses, it'd be nice if that manifest was equal globally. That no matter where you go in the world, the same piece of paper or the same system is required. That's a lot to ask. But I think we're trying to push that way. That's where I see the mountain to climb, that in my lifetime, the ability to somewhere, and it's already started to happen, get more of that globalization, more of that connectivity to allow a U.S. CBP officer to be able to do their job. And we already do. You know this. With international affairs, you know, there are CBP officers all over the world, men and women stationed in many different nations. We have the Container Security Initiative, which still, I think it's 50 plus nations that we have CBP personnel stationed. So amplifying that, continuing to create this giant kind of net that allows the world to be survivable in, when events happen. And I think 9/11 pushed that envelope to say, okay, can we survive? I hate to even say it, more of this. You know, what happens if it happens again? Are we going to have no flights anywhere in the world? Are we going to shut down resorts? And the pandemic has done the same thing in many ways. We've tested that. So I think those are challenges that, for me, while they're negative in the beginning, I think they show the ability to find solutions and push and stay engaged. And I just want to be a part of it. I'd love to. I do sit home and watch the Dodgers or play baseball once in a while. I like that. But just the same, I don't want to be on the sidelines while others are making solutions. I want to contribute and I want to be aware of what's happening. I know you are too. You're just like me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, there's a few things that I think we could dedicate another session to. Specifically, you know what 9/11 meant to all of us. Yeah. Also finding a way to kind of bridge, you know, the old experience with the new experience, you know, and I think that both of us, you know, our careers overlapped, and we saw a lot happen over the 20, 30 years that we were both with CBP. And just like you stated, in the past 2 years, we really stressed and tested the system, mm-hmm. To be able to do things we never thought he'd be able to do. Even trivial things like, you know, eating at home, where, you know, you can basically order anything now and it's brought to your doorstep.
Yeah.
The ability to, you know, transition to almost virtually online shopping experience and dining experience. It's incredible how things have changed that I don't know that they would have pushed it that far had it not been out of necessity. But to your point, I do think that the answer is somewhere in the middle. I like going to restaurants. I like going to shopping malls. I like, you know, leaving my house. I like doing things outside. And so I definitely want to make sure that we continue to take advantage of the technologies that we have, but also still pursue those you know, in-face encounters. And just like you said earlier in the call, my preference would be for you and I to be sitting at a table,
right.
And having this conversation. And the pandemic forced us to figure out new ways to continue to engage with our partners, with our friends, with our colleagues. And that's been sufficient, but I don't know that anybody would ever say that's ideal. And so I do look forward to whatever the new normal is, because I think that there's going to be a good balance between efficiency and the virtue of, you know, an interpersonal engagement or a physical validation, you know, whatever the scenario might present. But I think this was an awesome conversation, Ron. Like I said,
well, I appreciate you having me and allowing me to be on a forum where I can actually talk, because that's dangerous, letting me talk.
No, this has been awesome. And I look forward to speaking with you again. And like I said at the top of the call, this is going to be a series you're going to be doing on. And I do think that there's a few more topics that you and I could chip away at. And so I look forward to doing this again. But thank you for sharing your time with us. I hope our listeners enjoyed as much as I did. And I look forward to seeing you again. And we'll tackle one of these other ones.
Well, thank you very much. I just want everybody to be safe and keep the faith. The world will continue to spin. It always does. So thank you again and best of luck.
Awesome. Thanks again, Ron.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this segment of CTS Unpacked. For more information about CT Strategies and our team members, visit our website at ctstrategies.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn to share your thoughts or any ideas you'd like to see in future segments. Stay in the loop by joining our newsletter, where we share the latest CTS updates. Until next time, this is CTS Unpacked.